Network.
So, Bob Chapman, I can't say on air what TV network the person works for that you were just mentioning, can I?
I don't think you should. They know. They monitor all these programs. They just get more mad and try to figure out what to do about it. But these people aren't going to go away, and we're not going to go away either. And we're just going to keep on doing what we're doing, which is waking people up to the truth. And it'll all fall in place. And if we don't do a good enough job, he'll step in, the Lord, and he'll help us, just like you said earlier. So let's just keep on doing what we're doing. But you're going to help us out there, especially help people like the gentleman and his wife who are just on here. It's incredible what they're going through. And I'm sure these sort of things are going on throughout the country. And we can't have that.
I see reports every day that dwarf even that. It's just I know these people. It's happening all around us. For the average person in government, though, who's even involved in corruption, they're compartmentalized. They don't get the big picture. They haven't studied it. I mean, now the government's openly announcing every week they're going to start taking pension funds. I mean, that's now what the good guys do, and they're going to use Homeland Security to make sure it happens. I mean, this is pure evil. They've thrown their lot in with pure evil. It's not too late for a lot of these guys that work for the evil to make the decision to join the Patriots.
An exit. And, you know, that's where they get them. They need to make a living, and, of course, the economy's terrible. And if you leave your post, where are you going to work? They're not even hiring garbage collectors. It's bad out there, and it's going to get a lot worse. And so these people, a lot of them are trapped. They say, well, I don't want to do that. Well, if you don't, you're out of here. You just like the policeman, they say, look, you're going to write 40 tickets a month. And that's the end of it. If you don't, you know, you're going to either be demoted or we're going to replace you.
And then they lie about it and say there aren't quotas, but now they admit there's quotas.
Finally, after, you know, what, 100 years? You know, some states are really dreadful. And I got a letter today from someone who lived in New Jersey, and he said, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, they need to raise revenue so badly that they're it doesn't matter whether you break the law, infractions. They're going to pull you over anyway because they need the money.
Well, that's what Robin Hood went through, and that's what all of our ancestors, regardless of what color you are or where you came from, this is the old fight. You get corrupt government, it gets filled with criminals, they start robbing everybody, and there's no doubt we've got a really bad brand of tyranny taking over the West. But the people are waking up. Dr. Frederick Whitehurst thinks things are better now than they were a decade ago. We just now know things are bad, so it seems like it's worse. He thinks the tide is starting to turn. Do you agree?
Don't know. I hope he's right, but I never do things on hope. I always try to deal with the cold, hard facts that I can see and what I might be able to back into, knowing the only way you can understand these people, particularly at the other upper levels, is understanding the very sophisticated criminal mind. And if you can understand with the next thing that this criminal's going to do, you can stop them. And we know what they're going to do, the invisible government. Right there. You've got it right there in the DVD. That's what we've got to get out to people so they can better understand what they're dealing with. People in $4,000 suits running around robbing the world.
Do you agree that they're going to stage events very, very soon to be blamed on the Tea Party?
Yes, and it just won't be the Tea Party. It'll be all over the place. And they don't have to be major events. They can be small ones. They want to keep people's minds in turmoil. That's why they create these wars. People don't worry about economics and finance if they think their three boys who are over in Afghanistan, Iraq, and, say, Haiti, are going to get killed tomorrow morning. They're more concerned about that, and that's why they have these wars. Of course, they want to get rid of people, too.
And they want to destroy the economy so that everybody's too busy trying to pay the rent and pay the car payment and the insurance payment or fighting off the CPS to stand up against corruption. Bob, thanks for spending time with us, theinternationalforecaster.com. We'll see you again next Friday. God bless you.
You got it. Thank y'all for listening.
You bet. Dan Winter's coming up.
Hi, everyone. Andy Anderson here. Are you using those little bottles of hand gel that kill germs, bacteria, and other nasties? In today's world, that's smart, especially with the filthy doorknobs, shopping carts, and handrails we touch every day. Did you know that once the alcohol evaporates in a few seconds, goodbye effectiveness. No more protection till you use it again. PureWorks to the rescue. Our FDA-compliant foam, lotion, soap, and spray do not contain alcohol. Their killing power lasts up to 4 hours. PureWorks disinfecting spray is EPA-certified to kill swine flu, bird flu, MRSA, HIV, hepatitis B and C, and for our friends in medicine, kills C. diff, along with a whole host of viruses and bacteria, molds and fungus too. It's even safe around pets and children. You'll love how your skin feels with PureWorks, soft and supple. No more dry skin. Here's to a little peace of mind knowing that your hands are still germ-free hours later. Call now, toll-free, 888-245-0300 to get your hands on PureWorks and get PureWorks on your hands. That's 888-245-0300.
They helped to create a new world order.
We are part of a new world order.
A new world order based upon collective action.
Invisible Empire is a damning indictment of the globalists through their own words and documents.
The new world order really is a tool for addressing a new world of possibilities.
It means all the world under their control.
The United Nations would take over America. The Trilateral Commission would control the world.
Invisible Empire chronicles how men of power and influence have worked in stealth for centuries to establish an oppressive world government.
I believe, first of all, that we now need nothing short of a world constitution for the global financial system.
Global governance with the establishment of the G20.
So it's going to be an inner ruling elite and then everyone else. And I got news for you. You're everyone else.
Invisible Empire. Secure your copy today at Infowars.com or PrisonPlanet.com. Or watch it online in the highest quality at PrisonPlanet.tv.
Attention, an important product from HempUSA.org, microplant powder, will change your life by removing all types of positive toxins, such as heavy metals, parasites, bacteria, viruses, and fungus from the digestive tract and stomach wall so you can absorb nutrients. Microplant powder is 89% silica and packed with a negative charge that attracts positive toxins from the blood, organs, spine, and brain. This product has the ability to rebuild cartilage and bone, which allows synovial fluid to return to the joints. Silica is a precursor to calcium, meaning the body turns silica into calcium and is great for the heart. There is no better time than now to have microplant powder on your shelf or in your storage shelter. And with an unlimited shelf life, you can store it anywhere. Call 908-691-2608 or visit hempusa.org. It's a great way to change your life. So call 908-691-2608 or visit us at hempusa.org today.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
A couple months ago, Texas Monthly, I guess three or four now, called me, did an in-depth interview. I thought it was going to be a bad hit piece because mainstream media always does hit pieces, but it was pretty fair. I mean, I'd say 80% accurate. And I'd actually interviewed the reporter who exposed Tulia, Texas drug dealing and how they had right at half the black population of the town in the jail owned by the local Boss Hog. They were planting drugs on him. And it's Nate Blakesley. And then they said, yeah, we've got Dan Winters doing the photo shoot. And I like photography, but I'm not a photography expert or a photography buff. But I knew the name Dan Winters because he's in the top two or three, four reporters, not just in the U.S., but in the world. Time Magazine, Newsweek, I mean, you name it. This guy has photographed all the top politicians, all the top writers, all the top spiritual leaders, Hollywood folks, Brad Pitt, you name it. We're going to be showing some of those images for PrisonPlanet.tv viewers. For radio listeners, they can go to DanWintersPhoto.com and look at some of these. And so, I mean, I don't know who top photographers are, but I knew who Dan Winters was. And then he built a whole stage, a whole set for me out in his place out in the Texas Hill Country. And then he was telling me, in between the shoots, all these wild stories about different politicians or people he refused to photograph. And so he's here until the end of the show, end of the hour. And so we're very, very honored to have him here with us. Dan Winters began his career in photography as a photojournalist in his hometown in Ventura County, California, widely recognized for his celebrity portraits, scientific photography, and photojournalistic stories. He's won over 100 national and international awards. His wide range of publications and clients include Esquire, Fortune, Entertainment Weekly, Texas Monthly, Rolling Stone, Nike, Microsoft, Warner Brothers, and Sony. And in 2003, Dan was honored by Kodak as photo icon in their biographical Legends series. So he is a photography icon, and he is here with us. Dan, thanks for being here.
Good to see you, Alex. Good to see you.
You bet.
Last time it was under totally different circumstances, but I'm at the receiving end of the sharp stick now rather than you, so it's good to be here.
Well, I tell you, you did an amazing job. I mean,
yeah, I was pretty thrilled.
These are some incredible photos. In fact, we'll put some of the photos he took of me up there and then some of the others. You're here. I appreciate you coming in. I mean, you're on the Big Conspiracy Theorist show.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I you know, the thing about you and the thing about what you do and what you guys do, I think, is that, you know, it's more than a full-time job to keep track of all this stuff. And so, you know, the normal Joe goes to work, he comes home from work, he kicks back, he has his beer, he watches Fox News. He doesn't have time to pay attention to this stuff. And so I've always admired people, regardless of where their position was, that kind of really pay attention to this stuff. And, you know, I've dabbled in it, you know, and I think the most kind of almost one of the most sort of insulting or at least kind of patronizing sort of responses that that people give me whenever I talk about these issues is, you know, instantly you're like demoted to, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist, rather than having like an open-minded conversation about something that you've looked into. It's like, you know, I looked into, you know, Flight 93, for example. You know, I became curious. I'm interested in aerospace. I heard some of the reports. Well, you know, they were making cell phone calls and this and that. And I'm like, well, you know, the infrastructure for a cell phone call from 30,000 feet isn't in place. And it's, you know, I have no idea what happened. It's neither here nor there, but I question it from like a scientific standpoint. Like, well, how did that happen? You know, so I start researching that, and I start researching like capabilities in the Eastern Corridor, altitudes that cell phone signals will reach, et cetera, et cetera. And it like doesn't make sense, you know. And then there's all these cell phone or communications experts and technicians and, you know, electronics technicians that you can find online that are saying like, hey, you know, it's neither here nor there, but I can tell you right now that no one made a cell phone call from 30,000.
And it came out last year in FBI documents that the Solicitor General had never got a call from his wife and didn't talk to her. FBI admitted that. It came out 2 weeks ago. The ACLU sued and got the documents where Cheney ordered the commission not to look at the attacks, and it was a cover-up. We have 6 of the 10 commissioners saying it's a criminal cover-up. Yeah. John Farmer. But then we're not supposed to even ask questions as citizens.
I know.
We're supposed to sit down and shut up.
Well, you know, you look at it, too, and you look at the evidence, and you look. Oftentimes what happens is with any crime scene is, you know, the first responders are the only ones that get any imagery. After that, it's completely closed off. So they made this, like, ridiculous airplane-shaped pit in the ground that had some smoldering embers, almost like they put some charcoal in there and ignited it, you know. And the official sort of FBI, and they handled it as a crime scene. So the FBI handled the site, the FAA didn't, is that right?
Yes.
So they made this really ridiculous looking airplane shaped crater that was smoldering, and that was obviously to sort of, you know, to please the media with, you know, some sort of like visual. And and there was this ridiculous diagram that came out that I saw that I wish I had actually brought. That was the official FBI version of how the crash took place and what happened. And so basically what they said is the airplane came down in a straight dive, hit the ground, and the entire plane went under the ground. That, and they had a diagram they'd drawn.
Meanwhile, separately, the state police said an 8-mile debris field, engines 5 miles away.
I know. Which indicates high altitude, you know, catastrophic failure at high altitude, which indicates a missile, obviously. You know, it's kind of like it's the most ridiculous thing. And once again, you know, my friends instantly, you know, they're like, well, what do you think happened? What do you think this? What do you think that? And I'm like, you know, look, I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know how. I can tell you, though, that aircraft didn't hit the ground in one piece, because obviously, you know, an engine isn't going to end up 5 miles away from a crash site. You can look at, you know, crash site after crash site after crash site that, you know, that's been investigated by the FBA, that's widely photographed. And when a plane, you know, breaks up at altitude, the debris field, you know, Flight 111
Lockerbie.
No, that was 111 was the one in Nova Scotia.
Nova Scotia.
Yeah, that was the...
Well, we know debris fields, even when they crash into mountains or fields, normally hundreds and hundreds of yards long.
Absolutely. Contained, reasonably contained, right? But at altitude, the Lockerbie one, how big was the debris field there? Massive.
Yes.
High altitude burst, et cetera. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's so insulting. You know, if you do, you know, if you have an open mind, you have an understanding of some of these things, which, you know, I'm interested in these things, and you do 2 hours of research with existing imagery, you know, it's ludicrous that you would try to be sold that line.
Then you've got Building 7.
Well, Building 7, I know you're an expert on. I don't know as much about it, but I have researched the Pentagon one quite a bit. And that's another one that's absolutely ludicrous.
There's no engine holes, and there's a 16-foot hole.
Yeah, there's a 16-foot hole, no engine holes. And if you know, the structural integrity of an aircraft, once it's compromised, those things are made out of thin aluminum. They, you know, once it's compromised, those things will, you know, they'll crush so easily, right? But the engines are these masses, right, of titanium. They're heavy, heavy, heavy. They're not going to break up. You know, it's like if you see any imagery of car bombs in the Middle East, for example, you know, you have the entire car completely disintegrated, right? But there's always an engine block sitting there. That thing does not break up. You know, it's the one piece that, like, stays intact. So, you know, when you see, even on the debris field in Flight 93, right, the debris field's 8 miles wide. There's an engine 5 miles away. The photographs of the engine are the engine. Is intact. It's an engine. So when the cruise missile is what I think hit the Pentagon, on either side of that hole, there should have been massive holes, and the windows aren't even broken. It's like the most insulting.
And then later, after hours of fire, part of the roof caves in.
Exactly.
And they try to show that on the news. We have hundreds of these big high def photos that the government even took, and it's a smoking hole that looks like a perfect missile blast.
Exactly.
And everybody smelled cordite. Then they release some blurry image 6 years after that doesn't even show anything and say, there's the plane.
Yeah, exactly.
Meanwhile, they had hundreds of high-def cameras. They won't release those.
Right, of course. And the one image that they do release, if you lay a 757 over the size of that image, it's dwarfed. You know, it has a small profile, small signature, and a 757 would dwarf that thing and make a bigger hole and the wings and the engines. It's like ludicrous. And the fact that it, you know, happened to hit the, you know, mainly unoccupied section of the Pentagon, right? It was under construction.
Why do they think we're so dumb?
I don't know. And, you know, the other thing, too, is I know a lot of pilots. I've flown quite a bit in my life. The idea that, you know, setting up an approach to hit a runway starts 20 or 30 or 50 miles away from the runway, because you get into your approach, you set it up, and you go into, like, a controlled descent, and basically you fly the aircraft right to the ground, right? So the idea that these guys, and, you know, it's precision. It's precision to hit a runway. It's precision to hit the end of a runway. And so what you do is you take these guys that supposedly, like, took some classes on how to steer an aircraft, and you're trying to sell me the idea that they were able to hit the Pentagon precisely, put it into a controlled descent, get into ground effect, and, you know, hit it, like, what, 12 feet above the ground, like, perfect, like. Perfect. Like,
hundreds of top pilots said they couldn't do that on their best day.
I know. They couldn't even do it. They couldn't be that precise with it because, you know, getting into ground effect where you're riding on that air cushion and riding it right into that.
Even when they've had 50, 60 miles to get ready, you come in and only the best pilots can set them down smooth.
Exactly.
But still, they have to time it just right.
Exactly. And that's why a runway is 9,000 feet.
And the plane comes in like this. It doesn't come in near them perfectly.
Exactly. It's ridiculous. So tell me about Building 7, because you know more about that.
No, Dan, we've got you here. That's why I knew you'd be perfect for radio, because you and I were just, you know, really hit it off and we're talking. You said you had a lot of friends that were listeners. I'm just honored to have you here. And I wanted to talk about some of the interesting stories with celebrities and politicians, and also just get your view on the world and ask how you became such an awesome photographer.
Started when I was a kid. My favorite thing to do. I think the thing I'm most grateful for in my life is that, you know, every day I get up and I do exactly what I love to do. And, you know, I think the majority of the people that are, you know, have an interest, have a hobby, you know, it's an after work and enterprise, you know, it can't be parlayed into a career. And yeah, I don't know. I feel really fortunate about it, but also on some level, I'm not really surprised by it, you know, because it was always my passion. It was always what I felt like I would do.
You can follow your passion and do it because it's a passion. You're going to be successful.
100%.
Everybody else I've run into are trying to be famous or trying to be successful. If you just have passion.
Exactly. Yeah, if you know, it's the way you're expressing your passion in the universe. Someone told me that, said if if you have something to give the universe will beat a path to your door. And I really believe that. You know, it's like, you know, I'm a freelancer and I've been freelance for about 25 years. And people ask me all the time, like, oh my God, how can you live like that? You have no idea what you're doing next month. You know, don't you want some kind of steady job of this or that? And, you know, about 20 years ago, I made peace with it. I believe in the process. I put myself out there, and I feel like every time I do a job, I'm really respectful and reverent of the fact that the client's trusting me. They're investing their money in me, and I knock it out of the park every time.
You do. Dan Winters, stay there. We're going to break back in just a few minutes. We'll show you some more of his photography.
If you owe money to the IRS, you can't make the problem go away by yourself. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved once and for all.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. For 30 years, I've helped thousands of people solve their tax debt problem, and I can help you solve yours, too. We take a very simple but proven three-step approach to solving your problem. First, we stabilize IRS collection actions so you don't have to worry about the IRS seizing your bank account or paycheck. Next, we build a comprehensive plan to get your tax debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even completely eliminated. And finally, we work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. Call us for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829. We'll work together to get your problem solved, guaranteed.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for 3 decades, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Are you prepared or are you hardcore prepared? Get hardcore equipped at TacTownGear.com. That's TACTownGear.com. All TacTown gear has been field tested with Canadian and U.S. forces, so we know it's tough. What kind of gear? Our own brands. Arctic Warrior, Homeland Defender, Sandbox Avenger, Urban Peacekeeper. More than 30,000 products and 90% of it made in Canada and the U.S. See it all at TacTownGear.com. That's TACTownGear.com. Get 72-hour survival kits, Ultima boots, HW1 gloves, tactical link slings, EMA tactical weapon equipment, everything you need to be hardcore prepared. Deal with TacTownGear.com personnel with more than 25 years experience in military and law enforcement. Call now, 418-844-9111. That's 418-844-9111. Or go to TACTownGear.com. TacTownGear.com. Solutions for your area of operation.
You may be arrested and or subject to other police action.
Tyranny is here. The grim future foretold in 1984 has become reality.
It really says that the state is God.
The United States is now recognized globally as one of the most oppressive police states on Earth. This film conclusively proves the existence of a secret network of FEMA camps, now being expanded nationwide. This documentary exposes how the continuity of government program has established an all-powerful shadow state. Police State 4 chronicles the sickening depths to which our republic has fallen. Prepare to enter the secretive world of emergency dictatorship. Body scanners, sound cannons, citizen spies, stage terror, and cameras on every street corner. It's only the beginning of the New World Order's hellish plan. The police state isn't coming. It's here. Secure your copy today at Infowars.com or see it online in the highest quality at PrisonPlanet.tv.
As the economy continues to decline, patriots across the nation are preparing for the worst. The world is changing fast. Are you fully prepared? Or will you be forced to eat government soup? At PatriotFood.com, we offer you 135 pounds of dehydrated food and 6 varieties of canned meat for half price. And at SurvivalistSeeds.com, we now offer 50 non-GMO varieties of vegetables and over 10,000 heirloom seeds. That's twice as many as our competition for the same price. PatriotFood.com and SurvivalistSeeds.com. Food insurance, just in case. Owned by me, Big John Lipscomb.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Well, one of the top photographers in the world, I mean, I've looked him up. Some say the top photographer in the world. I mean, there's no one more prolific. and we're honored to have him. We're going to be scrolling through some of the politicians, movie stars, you name it, religious leaders that he has photographed for PrisonPlanet.tv viewers, or you can go to DanWinnersPhoto.com to see a lot more. Because he has computers in his office, and I'd be seeing photos of Schwarzenegger and photos of Al Gore. I mean, they're all so unique and just almost like a lens, take the spirit of somebody and then magnify it. I think that's what Dan Winters does, and we're going to talk about how you're able to do that, or is it just a kind of an idiot savant? I'm not saying you're an idiot, but you know what I mean. Like some. I mean, I think of myself with political stuff sometimes. It's just you just know you have that talent. But going back to the term conspiracy theorist, you're right. It's just a label they throw on people to say, oh, this information can't be looked at. This information, it's a way to downgrade it, when really just questioning the system is what any free human is supposed to do. I mean, here's the Globe and Mail today. The dangerously unbalanced world of global governance. They're admitting world government's being established. It's run by the banks. But then they say you're a conspiracy theorist if you don't want to be a slave of banks.
Exactly. And there's the, you know, and I'm sure you've probably used the quote on your show, probably on more than one occasion, but there's that great quote by Goering from the Nuremberg trials that says, you know, the normal people don't want war, but after all, it's not the normal people that are making the policy. You know, it's the politicians that are making the policy, and it's very easy to bring the normal people along. All you have to do is convince them that they're being attacked and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism. It works every time. And that is so true. You know, the whole idea of, like, questioning anything, I mean, even the fact that, you know, how contrived the term Patriot Act was, you know, so it implies that if you resist it at all, that, oh, man, you're not patriotic. You
know? Or the New Freedom Initiative to put half of America's kids on psychotropic drugs. That's a new freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. What about talk locally. You know, what about the police chief in Austin with the mandatory, you know, if you refuse breathalyzer, the mandatory blood test.
Without even having warrants.
Where they take you to a hospital and they violate your physical body to get blood out of you.
And now they're training the cops to do it.
It's unbelievable to me that anybody would stand for that for 1 second. I mean, clearly, historically, there's been policies that have been administered that have, you know, it's taken a while to get rid of them because you have to go through the appellate courts and to the Supreme Court, and then suddenly it's deemed, like, unconstitutional. But in the meantime, you know, people are being, and believe me, you know, I think drunk driving is aberrant, and I would not participate in it at all. But the idea that you can actually, like, take blood out of someone's body.
Well, they undermine the Bill of Rights and Constitution for a supposed greater good, but we know they're scientifically really just targeting the general population. It's like Homeland Security. We've got in their internal documents. It's really all pointed at the American people.
Absolutely.
From the beginning.
Absolutely. I did a really interesting piece, and I wish I had actually given you the photograph, but I was hired by a magazine to Esquire, and they were doing a piece on FAA and the TSA people and the way they screen, and that what the guy that was the head of the program within the FAA to test screening, and he was an ex-Navy SEAL, and his job, he had a small group of individuals, and their job was to breach airport security. And so what they would do is they'd look for patterns. They'd go into airport, they'd look for patterns. They'd do exactly what you would do if you were trying to breach airport security. You would educate yourself on what it was, on their methods, on their means, and then you would do it, right? So the whole idea of, like, the TSA screening and stuff, while I agree there should be some kind of, you know, checks and balances for people getting on an airplane, it's such a band-aid. When we go on jobs, we carry on, you know, $25,000 worth of cameras, and we carry them on, and it's a big case full of electronic equipment that no one in the TSA has any idea what they're looking at. And they'll open it up, and they'll kind of look through it, and they'll close it up. I mean, who knows what the hell those
cameras are? Well, we know, and they've admitted, all this TSA grabbing women's breasts, grabbing men's genitals, putting us through naked body scanners is to train us to have our privacy violated.
Space violated.
Yes.
Exactly. So get back to that Esquire story. So the guy who's writing, or the guy that's being focused on, is the guy that's the head of this, you know, sort of like rogue entity within the TSA/FAA, whose job is to violate or breach airport security. So, you know, what they do is they look for patterns, and he came up with this whole method at Kennedy. He said, look, you know, there's like three flights to the Middle East at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon out of Kennedy. And he said, we've watched very closely the way TSA goes through stuff, and they basically don't even look at anything. The stuff's going on. So he said that would be a prime target. So they make a bomb-looking device. They put it in a bag, and it gets through. So he was doing this. So my assignment from the magazine was, okay, why don't you – what we need you to do is we need you to figure out how to take down an aircraft. So I said, okay. So once again, I go online. I spend maybe 6-7 hours researching it. I figure out what kind of explosive to make, how you can make it. It's not detectable by any of the carbon-based testing methods that the TSA uses.
Dan Winters, got a break. That was a short segment, long segment coming up. Let's finish that story when we get back. Then we'll get into some of the more interesting things you've seen in your life traveling the world. Dan Winters is our guest, danwintersphoto.com. I'm Alex Jones.
We're on the march. The Empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Steve Shank, eFoods Direct. We have stopped taking orders for the Buy 3, Get 1 Free program and have started production. Congratulations. Your choice to participate in the production of your food supply by pre-ordering will prove very wise. Shipments will begin the end of March and will be sent in the order that they were received. Now something fun. It's springtime. We all know that garden seeds aren't really a food supply, but they're a great supplement to your food reserve if you have the time and place to garden. Here's the plan. When you add a 1-month superfood spring pack to your food storage, we'll send you that garden of non-hybrid seeds absolutely free. Order now while the free seeds last. Call 800-409-5633 or on the web, efoodsdirect.com/Alex. Get a real supply of food to eat while you wait for your supplemental garden to grow. Call 800-409-5633, efoodsdirect.com/Alex.
They helped to create a new world order.
We are part of a new world order.
A new world order based upon collective action.
Invisible Empire is a damning indictment of the globalists through their own words and documents.
The new world order really is a tool for addressing a new world of possibilities.
It means all the world under their control.
The United Nations would take over America. The Trilateral Commission would control the world.
Invisible Empire chronicles how men of power and influence have worked in stealth for centuries to establish an oppressive world government.
I believe, first of all, that we now need nothing short of a world constitution for the global financial system.
Global governance with the establishment of the G20.
So it's going to be an inner ruling elite and then everyone else. And I got news for you. You're everyone else.
Invisible Empire. Secure your copy today at Infowars.com or PrisonPlanet.com. Or watch you online in the highest quality at PrisonPlanet.tv.
Afraid to answer it? Afraid to answer your door? Did you know that debt settlement, bankruptcy, and attorneys will cost you about 10 times more than you would legally be required to pay creditors? These are not ways to help you get out of debt. They are expensive payment plans. And if you're in debt already, does it make sense to load yourself up with another payment plan? Zero debt in 90 days gets you out of debt in 90 days, guaranteed. And that's the website you need to visit right now. ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Zero debt in 90 days gets you out of debt without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com is the quickest solution to debt relief on the planet. If you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt, student loans, or difficult mortgage situation, we can help. And we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com.
Folks, shifting gears into another subject briefly, and then we'll continue the story that Dan Winters was telling about this shoot for Esquire. We're going to get into some other important issues with him while we're scrolling. Great photos he's taken in the background. For radio listeners, you'll be able to see this archived at PrisonPlanet.tv. Charlie Sheen quits 2.5 Men. And I don't normally get into entertainment news, but this is not really stemming from the problems he's had. You know, good friend of mine, 9/11 truther, really smart guy, great guy. I can just tell you all the stuff you've heard in the news. It's made up or exaggerated. His enemies will, you know, declare victory. But a year ago, he told me he wanted this to be his last season. And just a few months ago, he told me before the thing happened on Christmas Day that he probably wasn't going to re-up his TV show. But here's the New York Post. Troubled, Charlie Sheen says he's leaving hit CBS TV show Two and a Half Men. At the end of the season, Sheen, who returned to a men's set last month after a stint in rehab, will call it quits after taping his final episode April 9th. See, that's not even true. I know, Charlie. He wasn't drinking, wasn't using drugs, drinks way too much coffee, and smokes Marlboro Reds. So I spent a lot of time with him. But he went to a basically a spa so that under the stress he wouldn't go back on alcohol or drugs that he'd been off of for years. So that's a lie here from his enemy, the New York Post. His spokesman, Stan Rosenthal, did not deny the report. Charlie's deal is only through this current season, he told People. So there's the inside scoop here, folks. Charlie quit because he wants to spend time with his family and is sick of eight-plus seasons. And the New York Post and others are spinning this like his problem with his wife, Brooke, who's a nice person, like that's why he's quitting. That may have been the cherry on top, but there's that info. Dan, I apologize for digressing off into fluff, but Charlie's my friend. I wanted to back him up and set the record straight.
Yeah, I don't think it's fluff. He's done some good work, I think.
Well, you know, everybody's human, and people love to see somebody big in trouble. Right. And you know, even when Limbaugh got caught in stuff worse than what Sheen's involved in, I wasn't cheering his downfall, even though I disagree with him passionately, because I just don't. I only cheer for real tyrants going down, you know, people like Hitler or Stalin or Mao.
I agree totally. And I think I think you're absolutely right about it. I think we love watching people ascend the ladder, but we like watching the ladder fall over much better. And it's, what I think it is I think that, you know, the media and the way the media works and the way publishing works, et cetera, and I'm a part of it. So, I mean, I should be pointing the finger back at myself, but the idea is to create a lure, so that someone feels larger than life. And I think, you know, we talk about why film and why celebrities, specifically like actors and film, why for some reason it is such a part of our collective consciousness. And I think it's for that very reason. You know, I can go see The Hurt Locker, and you can go see The Hurt Locker completely separately. But we have an experience that provides connectivity. And so you and I both now are connected through seeing that film. We can talk about it. We can talk about the issues around it, et cetera. So I think that's one reason. And, you know, it stems.
And I think it's sick wanting to see somebody fall.
Absolutely.
When this happens to our own families and neighbors. This is sick. This shows a sickness, and I see it getting progressively worse, that people love to see somebody in trouble. But I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Well, I think to get to what you're saying right now, too, I think that when someone gets really angry at someone who's suffering, rather than look at it from love and detachment and with compassion, I think it says something about the individual, you know, that's thrown the stones. You know, he who is without sin, may he cast the first stone. I mean, to do a biblical quote, it's absolutely spot on. You know, we are all fallible. We're all failed. We all have our own problems. I realized several years ago that, you know, the one thing that we all have in common is that we all have problems, period. We all have problems. And I think our role in life is to try to work through those problems.
And that's the human condition.
Absolutely, 100%. So, yeah, it is.
Yeah, I only want to bring down people that are hurting masses of innocents and who are consciously setting people up, consciously hurting others, consciously launching wars, torturing people, betraying. That's why I hate these politicians. Bush, of course, and Obama, expanding wars, wiretapping, continuing the torture, continuing the arrest, and watching him use all of this hope that people had put into him against them. And again, I don't personally hate Obama. I know he's a puppet who they plan to destroy. It's just that I realize that the institution itself is just so ruthless.
Yeah, the institution, and I think that's a good point. I worked with him. You know, he seemed like one of those guys you'd want to go out and have a beer with. He seemed like a totally cool guy. I believe, truthfully, that when he was campaigning, he has a lot of, you know, ethos that he adheres to, that he really believes in. But I think when you get in that office and the first day that you're briefed, you know, it's all bets are off. You know, I mean, the first day it was like we're closing Guantanamo, and I saw a photograph recently that was the most ironic photograph. It was a picture of one of the guards or one of the officials at Guantanamo hanging his photo up in the lobby when you come in. You know, it was the most ironic image, considering, you know, if you've ever been to a military installation, when you walk in the main building, there's the chain of command. So, you know, you'd walk in a building during Bush's administration, and Bush was in the middle. And then on either side, there were photographs of the chain of command that goes down. So at Guantanamo, there's the chain of command, and there's Obama, the photograph of Obama right in the middle. And, you know, once again, I truly believe, like, I won't weep when Kissinger drops. I won't weep when Rockefeller drops. I don't think, honestly, anybody will. And that's really unfortunate, you know, that they've lived a life like that. But, you know, once again, you know, I try to view these things.
Yeah, their human journey is just a tragic event of power and avarice. Now, I interrupted you with a break. Let's go back to that Esquire piece that you were talking about. Recap it and then tell us about it.
Okay, the assignment, to get back to it, Esquire was doing a piece on airport security and the idea of, you know, how difficult. My assignment was, Dan, research and illustrate how difficult it would be to take down an airliner. And initially I thought, well, that's kind of an irresponsible job. It's kind of irresponsible to illustrate that. But then I thought about it and I thought, well, it's actually more irresponsible not to illustrate how easy it is, because anybody that wants to take down an airliner is going to take down an airliner. Period. You know, they're going to do it. They're going to do the research required, and they're going to figure it out. So I started looking into it, and I spent several hours on the internet, and I came up with a formula for an explosive that was non-detectable by the screening that's used now, which is all carbon-based detection. This is a chemical element. It's got 80% of the destructive power or the explosive force of TNT, and it can be made at your house. It can be carried. So the method I came up with is this. You know, you get three guys working together, and this is all based on the fact that these guys are going to off themselves, but there doesn't seem to be a shortage of guys that are willing to.
And you're doing this drill to try to stop this from happening.
Or to try to illustrate to people, like, hey, look how easy this is. You know, look how easy it would be to do this, you know. And it's almost like a wake-up call. It's like, oh, my God, you know, like, you know, we think these guys are you know, the security is such a Band-Aid. You know, it's, you know, right after 9/11, what was it like? You couldn't walk 2 feet away from your bag without getting, like, scolded, right? Now it's like, I'll leave my bag at the gate, ask someone to watch it, go to the bathroom, come back. It's like no one's worried. There was National Guard in the airport when it
happened. But we go back to the point that most of it's manufactured. Have you had time to see the underwear bombing?
I totally agree. You know, it's...
I mean, the State Department says they were ordered by a U.S. intelligence agency to help him get on the plane.
Yeah. Okay, so there you go. So it's the same thing. It's the whole idea of, like, you keep them in fear. You know, threat level orange, threat level yellow, threat level red. I laugh when I hear that stuff when I'm at the airport because it reminds me of that Goering quote. It's like, you know, keep them in fear. Keep them feeling like they're being repressed. Let me get back to the Esquire thing. So I figure out the whole process to do this. You know, you get three guys. You have two guys carrying the explosive device in their groin. Once again, usually, and this might be changing, but usually, even with a pat down, they don't go right to that area. You know, so you can get that in, and then you take in a 9-volt battery, some wire, a couple flashlight bulbs. I used a timer off of a dog feeder, right, that I bought at, you know, Academy or something. So the idea is you take all this stuff in independently, which is, it'd be very easy to get in. The only thing I thought would be difficult was maybe some duct tape. So I thought, well, what you'd do is you'd line your entire bag with duct tape, and then you could get it in, and then you could pull the strips off and use it. But then you go into the little kiosk, you buy a couple of bottles of Coke, and you all go to the men's room. One guy goes into the handicap stall. He spends about 15 minutes assembling the thing, getting it all ready to go, puts it on his bag, takes it into the plane. And then the research further was, well, okay, so he blows it up in the plane. It might compromise, you know, the hull. It might do this. It might do that. But it probably wouldn't take it down. So what you do then, which is also another one of these ridiculous Band-Aids, is that, you know, once 9/11 happened, they reinforced all the cockpit doors. You know, they made these Kevlar doors. You can't get in. But what they didn't do is they didn't reinforce the bulkhead behind the captain or the co-pilot. All they did is do a door. So 757 and a couple other aircrafts have in the first class cabin, they have a bathroom that immediately backs up against the cockpit. So you go in there and you detonate it and it's done. And, you know, this was, you know, 6 hours of research on my part. And so the idea is that it's incredibly simple to do this stuff.
How long ago did you do that for Esquire?
That was like 2 years ago. And I wish I had brought that image with me, because what I did is I did a still life of all of the elements that were required.
What should we Google? Dan Winters, Esquire, how to bomb a plane?
Do that. It was Esquire or Best Life. I'm thinking, after I said Esquire, I was thinking it might be Best Life. Do Dan Winters, Best Life bomb, and I bet it'll
Dan Winters, Best Life bomb. Did you guys have any luck? Because you wanted to also show people how fake the photo is with the newspaper and the rifle of Lee Harvey Oswald in the front yard where the shadows are all wrong. Okay, well, we'll show that first, but we're running out of time here. I knew it'd be great to have you on the radio because you've got so much knowledge and we're so similar in so many ways and our perspectives. But I mean, you were telling me stories, and I don't know if some of them are off record or if you want to tell stories, but what are some interesting stories about movie stars or politicians or Rick Perry or whatever that you can tell?
Okay. Rick Perry, the hair politician. The funniest story about Rick Perry, I photographed him twice. You know, he is the consummate smooth guy. He comes in, you almost instantly have a nickname. He remembers your name. It's this whole politician thing. You know, and I've been other politicians. You know, a good friend of mine, Jack Valenti, who just passed recently, he told me, if you don't like Bush, don't spend 10 minutes in a room with him because you'll love him. Because he's that kind of, you know, you instantly get a nickname. You instantly feel like, you know, he has that ability to make you feel special, you know. And, you know, I was offered twice to photograph him. Newsweek offered me a cover the day after the election, the initial election, when he was first voted president, and I turned it down because I just fundamentally can't like photograph someone.
Well, you know, he looks more like a demon when he does the smiles, or like an evil clown. Yeah. That when he does that laughing, yeah. I mean, it upsets me. And, you know, he had me arrested one time for just asking him a question. I don't know if you've ever Googled Alex Jones arrested for asking governor a question at a press conference.
Okay.
And I asked him about the world government, and they just drugged me out and arrested me.
Is that right? Well, I had a funny run-in with Rick Perry at a bicycle sports shop. I went in there to get something, and he was in there, and he was in his bike outfit, and he had his assistants with the big file of faxes and a couple of the Capitol Police with him. And so I heard him. I was in there, and I was kind of listening, and I heard him talking to his assistant, and he said, like, okay, I'm going to go for a bike ride from 10 to 12, then I'm going to meet Bill for lunch, then after that I'm going to do this and go for a run, then I'm going to go swim, you know, this. And I'm listening to all this, and as soon as he finished it, I was standing right next to him, and I said, you planning on doing any governing today? Because it sounded like his day was full of recreation, you know. But, yeah, these guys, you know, most of these guys, and I think the point you brought up about Bush's laugh, my experience with politicians is they don't really know what they're supposed to do, and so they have this kind of fake smile that they throw on. And you know, I photographed Phil Graham one time, and I said he kept doing this really bizarre smile, and I was trying to get a shot that felt natural, like we were talking about earlier. You were talking about the idea of how to kind of like capture the essence of someone, you know, and when they're not taking direction and they're doing what they think a photograph is supposed to be. You know, I think a lot of people think like, oh, a great photo is of a sunset or something. You know, it's like super passe, but once again, a sunset inspires all of us. People look at a photo of the sunset and it takes them to that point, whatever. The most common sort of genre of photographs. But Phil Graham said, I said, yeah, maybe just relax your mouth. Maybe just do something serious. And he said, boy, I worked on this smile for a long time. I'm going to smile. So, and it was the
boy,
most painfully forced like smile you could possibly imagine. But I don't even know where we're at.
I like to photograph like out in the country, old shot up washing machines.
Yeah.
And the way the bullets have gone through and the rust.
Cars. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff I like.
Yeah.
Not that I just like photographs, you know, that are of an old barn or an old woman. Or I love all of your photos.
Great, thanks.
Because it does. So I was accurate when I said that you somehow draw out the essence of people.
I try to. And, you know, I think to a certain extent it's like I've called it before, I've called it a manufactured intimacy. And I think the idea behind, you know, the range of human expression and human emotion is so wide that I think what I try to do is I try to capture sort of like, usually, except for the case with your crazy screaming photograph, is that but that's a part of your personality. And so that was an accurate representation, I suppose, right? But the idea is to try to go to a place that feels pensive, that feels introspective, that feels, you know, quiet oftentimes. It doesn't feel like it's, you know, manufactured. It doesn't feel like it's ingenuine. You know, it's capturing a moment of that individual, but I think it's a reflective moment, and I think people respond to reflective moments.
Why did you choose this photo as the cover page when you opened the magazine up?
I didn't. The magazine did, and I would have hoped, what I was hoping is that the screaming photo was by itself with the, my dream would have been the screaming photo was by itself and the typography on one side, and then you turned to that photo, and then the last photo was the one in the set. You know, I had hoped for that, but I was really happy with
it. So first show me in the screaming, and then show the calm.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, just kind of jump back and forth, because once again, and I really like this very flattering photo of you.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, you like that one, huh? That's your new headshot, exactly.
Well, that's what I look like to myself when I'm looking in the mirror, you know, brushing my teeth,
sure.
And then I'm not really photogenic. I mean, I'm not very narcissistic, but at the same time, you're looking at photos of yourself. It's like, that doesn't really look like me.
Of course, absolutely.
And but your photos, because I've met some of these famous people in person, the photos you take of people is what they really look like.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a challenge when you're shooting someone famous, by the way, because you've seen them represented in the media so many times. It's like, how do you make that quintessential image and still have it be a recognizable image? And what I try to do in my photographs, and I think to a large extent I'm successful, is to try to create a timeless, iconic image. So that is not to use, like, fancy, tricky lighting stuff, to keep it really simple. There he is.
Let's quit looking at me now. In fact, we don't have much time. Run through some of the other photos at the end of that we haven't seen of other people. Go ahead. Did we find the Lee Harvey Oswald photo yet? We're going to show that when we come back. Sorry, Dan. Go ahead.
All right. No problem.
I'm in here directing while I'm on TV.
Where are we at? You're direct. Here, discontinue the direction of the flow of the conversation.
No, it's just you were saying, you were talking about how to...
Oh, to create a genuine moment and still have it be an accurate representation of what that individual looks like. Because, once again, you know, people that are really widely known in the news and stuff, it's very difficult to create an image that stands out and that's going to connect to you because you've seen so many of them. So the idea of trying to create, you know, try to heighten it to the point where it becomes iconic, I guess, ultimately. And, you know, through the history of photography, there are those single images that represent to everyone. You know, if I said Lincoln, there are a couple photographs, even though he was photographed, you know, he wasn't actually photographed that many times, like 12 times, I think. But there are a couple. You know, there's that one at the end of the war, shortly before he was killed, where you just see how completely decimated he had become from the war.
He looks like a corpse already.
Unbelievable. Yeah, just...
There's the Iwo Jima Marines, how exhausted they look at the triumph.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's the sailor kissing the beautiful woman in New York.
Alfred Eisenstadt.
And you could just capture that they're going to be having a great time together that night.
Joe Rosenthal with the flag-raising shot and Alfred Eisenstadt with the Times Square shot.
We've got a break. When we come back, your favorite photograph in the world or your top three or four, okay. Then we'll look at this fake Lee Harvey Oswald photo with a photographic expert and a lot more. He's Dan Winters.
AirAndAqua.com is your one-stop shop for some of the most affordable air and water purification systems available on the market today. AirAndAqua.com knows exactly what doesn't belong in our air and our water, and they know exactly how to help you rid your home or office of these harmful toxins. Did you know that your skin actually absorbs more chlorine while you shower than from the water you drink? AirAndAqua.com can help you eliminate dangerous chlorine from your water. AirAndAqua.com carries atmospheric water generators, glass water bottles, chlorine reducing shower filters, air purifiers, water ionizers, filters that remove up to 95% of the fluoride in your water, whole house water purification systems, solar powered lawn and garden products, water testing kits, and more. Visit airandaqua.com. That's airandaqua.com. Or call 1-866-380-2782. That's 1-866-380-2782. airandaqua.com. Purify your life today.
You may be arrested and or subject to other police action.
Tyranny is here. The grim future foretold in 1984 has become reality.
It really says that the state is God.
The United States is now recognized globally as one of the most oppressive police states on Earth. This film conclusively proves the existence of a secret network of FEMA camps, now being expanded nationwide. This documentary exposes how the continuity of government program has established an all-powerful shadow state. Police State 4 chronicles the sickening depths to which our republic has fallen. Prepare to enter the secretive world of emergency dictatorship. Body scanners, sound cannons, citizen spies, stage terror, and cameras on every street corner. It's only the beginning of the New World Order's hellish plan. The police state isn't coming. It's here. Secure your copy today at Infowars.com or see it online in the highest quality at PrisonPlanet.tv.
This is not a drill.
Repeat.
This is not a drill.
Gun sales are on a staggering pace.
Gun prices are going through the roof, and that means desperate, vicious criminals now want your guns
and will do anything to get them.
Now, a new book reveals powerful secrets for hiding your guns from thieves and looters. You'll learn step-by-step battle-hardened techniques, where to hide your guns so criminals will never find them,
how to create the perfect hiding place,
as well as the places you should never hide your guns
under any circumstance.
These and other closely guarded gun caching secrets are guaranteed to keep your weapons safe.
safe and out of sight when the going gets tough.
But listen up.
For security reasons, the Hide Your Guns book and even the website may disappear without warning at any time. Go to hideyourguns.com.
That's hideyourguns.com.
Or call 877-327-0365.
Before they come for your guns.
Hideyourguns.com right now.
Right now. Right now.
The union's a big businessman, and it's going out like that dinosaur.
Well, there's the famous setup photo, a Photoshop from back in 1963 before they had Photoshop of Lee Harvey Oswald as a photographer. What is wrong with that photograph?
Well, you know, there are a lot of things wrong with it. The most obvious thing for me is that the light is coming from his left from an angle and at a pretty low angle in the sky because you can see the shadow coming back from his body at about 10 o'clock. So that would indicate a light source that's off his axis at about 5 o'clock. So that's inconsistent then with the lighting that's on his face. The lighting that's on his face, if you'll notice, the shadow goes straight down from his nose.
12 o'clock.
12 o'clock overhead. His eyes, both eye sockets are dark, which indicates also an overhead light source. So it's clearly a photograph that was staged. The interesting thing about that is the entire house was cleaned out the day of the assassination by the Dallas Police Department completely. Every single thing, every dish, every fork, every knife, every sheet, everything. And then 2 days later, suddenly someone goes back to the house and supposedly finds the photo in the house and brings it in. So it's clearly a fake photo. And the thing about it is, back then, yeah, they didn't have Photoshop, but what they could do is work at an incredibly large scale. So they could have made a 20 by 24 print of the person standing in for the image, made a big giant print of a headshot from Oswald that they had, combined them, and then re-photograph it. And the print that they found was 3 inches by 3 inches. So very difficult.
All right. We don't have much time. I want to have you back sometime. Right. No. I could have you for 5 hours. Shifting gears again. I don't want to get I believe we do have a space program that went to the moon. I've talked to top astronauts. Yeah. But they wanted to fake some photos for the public to not show the public what we really have. What do you think of those moon photos?
Well, I think the most interesting thing about the moon photos is that there are some problems with them. There's some definite problems with them. You know, I've actually photographed Conrad Grissom and Harrison Schmitt. Harrison Schmitt was the last person that sat foot on the moon. Conrad, obviously.
We've interviewed him, yeah. Schmitt.
Yeah, exactly. Schmitt's amazing. Geologist. You know, and the thing about it is that the lighting is really inconsistent in those photographs based on, you know, the light source on the moon would be one singular source. It would be the sun only. So either you got light on you or you don't. So the shadows are all pure black and the highlights are all pure white because they're illuminated. So the problem with, you know, the photograph of Aldrin coming down off the LEM, you know, that entire it's backlit, and so the LEM should be black. It shouldn't be illuminated, but it's illuminated.
But instead, there's angles everywhere of light.
Yeah, there's multiple shadows. There's directional shadows. There was a great photograph that NASA had a film image that they had released, which they've since pulled. You know, I think it got in under the radar, and some people got it, and they questioned it, and it got pulled, of the flag on the moon blowing.
Yes.
No, you've seen that. Okay.
So as a top photographer who knows the whole science of it, this is suspicious.
It's suspicious. And, you know, I've looked in that. I watched the documentary, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon, which there's a lot more stuff on there that's really inconsistent. And it was almost part of the same interest I had with the 9/11 stuff with the Pentagon. You know, something seemed weird.
And we have a right to question it.
You look at it.
Unfortunately, we're down to a minute and a half. Let's show the photo of his father here. And I described what I got from it, you know, that it's, you know, it's almost like the Sistine Chapel where God's reaching down, but also he's old, he's wise, he's strong, but you said vulnerable.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of vulnerability in that image, you know, especially in his eyes. You know, it looks like, to me, you know, that was a perfect photograph. That's my favorite that I've ever done. There are some of my son, actually, that would compete with that one for favorite photo. But, you know, he and I took a walk. I usually always have a camera with me. We took a walk out in his house in the high desert in California, and the light was absolutely stunning. There was a little breeze. It was one of those things where it's like, hey, can I do a portrait of you real quick, Dad? Yeah, you know, shot 10 frames, done, finished the walk, processed the film. stunning. You know,
you caught that magic moment.
Perfect. I mean, the hair blowing. For me, it was really the magic moment.
DanWintersPhoto.com. DanWintersPhoto.com. I'm Alex Jones. InfoWars.com. See you back this Sunday, 4 to 6 p.m. We have two new trailers for two new films up at InfoWars.com. Great job, crew. God bless you all. Dan Winters, thank you.
Thanks, Alex. Great seeing you guys.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.